Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in this Monday at 11 p.m. as the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time, presents By the Dawn's Early Light by Lawrence Block.
This is a case that shouldn't be in the first place, and I'd love to clear it up before they even go so far as presenting a bill to the grand jury.
So for me, you want...
Whatever you can find, Matt. I don't know what there is to be found. But you were a cop, and now you're a private. You can get down on the streets and nose around.
Tune in this Monday at 11 p.m. Gremlin Times 3D radio players present an adaptation of Lawrence Block's short story, By the Dawn's Early Light, right here on Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries Child Care for Construction, working to provide resources and support for construction apprentices registered with the State of Oregon in partnership with Business Oregon. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
Hello. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, created here on KBOO 90.7 FM, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Before we get started with our Labor Day interview, I'd like to encourage our listeners to go deep and contribute to our fall membership drive entitled KBOO Out Loud. Help us reach our on-air goal of $45,000 during our drive that began on August 20th and ends on September 20th. Remember, every dollar we raise helps us reflect the heart of the community 7 days a week. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO 244321. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am the first vice president of the Ask Me Retiree chapter and the president of the Oregon chapter of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm a retired public employee and was represented by Oregon Ask Me during my active working years. I'm joined by my sisters in the struggle. Ladies, please introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm retired from the UAW staff in Detroit. I'm also the vice president of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unions and the Region 10 regional women's representative. And I'm president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute.
Good evening, listeners. My name is Deborah Hall, and I'm the current secretary treasurer of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm a retired member of American Federation of Teachers, past president of the classified union there at Portland Community College, past state federation vice president, and currently in the city of Vancouver, I am serving on the Civil Service Commission. Welcome to the show.
Again, this is Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'd just like to say the return of Donald Trump to the White House has been a worldwide challenge, resulting in an ongoing network of chaos aimed at the most vulnerable. So organized labor has taken on this challenge to defend the livelihood of the working class, the working poor, and to defend the remnants of the New Deal that was designed to provide relief, recovery, and reform in a time of near a need during the 1933 and 1939. So organized labor has stopped a unified strategy, drawing a line in the sand to protect the most vulnerable during our present days of need.
All right, listeners, today is our brother Graham Treanor. Graham is currently the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Today, in recognition of Labor Day, we've invited him to discuss two topics: labor's rise in popularity for union representation and labor's response to this urgent threat to national and local democracy. Welcome back to the Labor Radio Show, Brother Treanor. How are you?
I'm great. It's always a pleasure to be with you, sisters.
All right. And before we move on with this interview, I'd just like to give you props for your recent address at the Washington State Labor Council Convention last month. I was in attendance and couldn't be prouder to see the Oregon AFL in the House, and you brought it. Thank you for your passionate address to the delegates. You had people on their feet, feeling labor, feeling the movement, feeling the passion, and thank you very much for that. All right.
You're too kind. Thank you.
All right. All right. You know how it is, man. You got to give it when it's good. Come on. All right. So April 29th, 2025 marked the first 100 days of governance for President Trump's administration. Time magazine reflects it has been the most destabilizing in American history. The fundamental effects of his actions have not only stymied federal programs, but have also stunned local ones. So my question, first question is, since President Trump's 2016 election, the desire for union representation has increased. In fact, in January of last year, 2024, the Oregon AFL cited that Oregon's union membership was the third highest in the nation. Yes, the third highest in the nation. And so, Brother Graham, do you have a definitive number of workers who now have union representation in Oregon?
So the range is for Oregon's union membership is around 300,000 total union members, you know, give or take, about 315,000 represented by unions, about 295,000 members. And so that's historic growth. I think what we've been really inspired by is just the diversity of workers who are coming together to form their first unions in many cases, and the diversity of industries that those workers are working within. So it really, the movement of today is not your grandfather's union movement. And I think the examples of Starbucks and Amazon workers and the list goes on really shows that really clearly. So.
Excellent. And so also, can you address the rise in the popularity of union representation? And what do you attribute to this growth?
Yeah, I really appreciate the question, Deborah, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. You know, union membership and the union movement is the last bastion of hope and the best and most effective check to corporate greed for the working class, period. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like the organized labor movement. And so so when I think a lot, I talk a lot about the rise in popularity and union favorability, because it's really significant, right? Over 70% of Americans say that they support the union movement. 9 out of 10 young workers age 30 and younger, support unions and support our movement. And I think there's a number of things that you can kind of point to over the last 4 or 5 years that drive those numbers and have continued to see those increase. One, throughout the pandemic, there, regardless of the trauma and the death toll and the loss and the chaos that was created by that global pandemic, the labor movement didn't miss a beat. We were in the streets, whether it was participating in the racial justice reckoning around the George Floyd murder or fighting back to protect healthcare heroes that were treated like zeros by their bosses a lot of times. And the list goes on of examples of how the union movement never missed a beat and was really seen by the public and by average working people as really the only group, the only constituency, the only organization that was fighting back with everything we had. And so I think when workers saw that, when workers saw that their boss wasn't prioritizing their health and safety on the job, and then they countered that with a movement that was in the streets around the country and here in Oregon, I think that they saw that the labor movement was really fighting for them, and really maybe the only type of organization fighting for them. And I think that in part has been why, both through and since the pandemic era, that we are now seeing the types of popularity that we see.
And so, last question. So if workers wanted union representation, how can they find out how to do that? What process do they need to follow?
Well, I always say to our affiliates and to any worker who will listen, that our job in the organized labor movement is to make sure that any worker dreaming of a better life has the transformational, life-changing opportunity to hold a union card like we all do, and like those fortunate enough to have a union do. And so one of the ways that we do that at the Oregon AFL-CIO is by hosting a website that's titled unionizeoregon.com. That's a place where you can get connected to a union organizer and learn the ropes about what it might take to consider forming a union. I think one of the things that's really, really important to keep in mind that, you know, just because the bosses and the CEOs and the billionaires do everything they can to stifle workers organizing, that doesn't mean that you don't have power as a worker. And so I think helping workers navigate, no matter what sector they're in, the process, understanding the ins and the outs of the do's and the don'ts, the making sure the boss doesn't find out about your organizing campaign too early, those types of things, that's something that we can help. And we do our best to connect workers with specific union organizers through that website, unionizeoregon.com.
All right, President Traynor, thank you very much, and happy Labor Day.
You bet.
President Traynor, this is Dr. Terrell. An element of contract negotiation requires both the employers and the workers to act in good faith within a prescribed period. So what happens if the process is slow walk?
Oh man, that's a great question, because I feel like I'm trying to keep this PG here. I think that workers, you know, when pushed too far by their boss, by their employer at the table in a collective bargaining and contract negotiation process, you know, workers in many sectors are feeling like their only option is to withhold their labor, to really use the most powerful weapon that is the strike. The most powerful weapon that the working class has is to withhold our labor. And so we would never automatically say that we encourage strikes. We prefer that there would be fewer strikes. We want fewer and shorter strikes. But the reality is, in a unionized setting, if workers feel like they're pushed too far, feel like they're not being heard, feel like their boss is dragging their feet, sometimes a real credible threat of a strike is the most important thing that they can bring to the table. And I think that you're seeing that play out in lots of different examples. I like to talk about settlements of a union contract negotiation process that are like a strike settlement, but without having to go on strike. And a lot of times the only way that that's possible is for workers to have really, really strong CAT teams, contract action teams. It's for them to be mobilized and organized in the workplace. It's for them to really show the boss that they have power, they have worth, and if the boss isn't willing to meet him in a fair and adequate contract, that they may have to consider the most using that most powerful weapon, which is the strike.
Mm-hmm. And just to keep to iterate on the strike vote, when it's the last resort in settling contract dispute, it appears that more workers are choosing to do this. So why are they gravitating toward this choice?
You know, going on strike is not easy for anyone. No one wants to go on strike. No one takes it lightly. It's an economic hit for a worker. It's a very scary and daunting thing to consider for any worker who's even thinking about that. And so I would never want anyone to believe that it's a vacation, like the employer community and like bosses like to say. It's not a break from work. It is a last resort. And when workers feel empowered along with their coworkers, and they feel organized and they have strong membership numbers and they have strong strike authorization numbers, and they're tight and they're tight and there's nothing that can get between them. There's no daylight between any of the workers in terms of divide and conquer strategies that the boss likes to use. I think when workers are pushed to their limit, and they're forced to consider in a really significant, serious way using that choice, using that powerful weapon. I think that's, you're seeing more of that as corporate power and influence grows. You're seeing more of that as the wage inequality data continues to really be pretty startling when you see numbers like 285 times the average worker is what the average CEO makes in today's economy. When you see an example right here in Oregon, actually, of a tech company whose CEO makes 1,300 times that of their average worker in the high tech space and semiconductor manufacturing space, there's something wrong and something's got to give. And again, in the unionized setting, when workers have a voice, when they have a contract, when they have coworkers that they're bound through solidarity in a union with, they have that option on the table, I think all of those things are leading to the kind of strike activity we're seeing, with nurses going on a historic, largest healthcare strike in the state's history earlier this year, and Boeing workers going on strike, 35,000 of them in the Pacific Northwest, fighting back against a corporate giant who just wasn't willing to treat them like they deserve to be treated, right? And so I think, again, in a setting where workers have that option, where they have that solidarity, where they have that union contract, that can obviously be a powerful weapon worth using.
I'm thinking on legislation. What legislative measures were enacted during the 2024-2025 legislation session that provided support to the working class during this difficult contract negotiations?
I could spend a whole session talking about that, but I'm going to make it concise to about three things. One, I would say about the Oregon legislative session that we just got out of in 2025 in June. I would say that there were historic wins and gains for organized labor and for working people. There were also some missed opportunities and some disappointments. And so I just want to frame it that way. But the three things that I would say, I think, really speak to the accomplishments that we were able to make as a working class and as a labor movement. One, we're really proud to say that we passed the strongest bill in the country to give striking workers access to unemployment insurance after 2 weeks on strike. It were the first state for that to apply to both private sector workers and public sector workers. So that's a really big deal, because it's not about incentivizing more strikes. It's about giving workers more power at the table to make their boss care quicker, right. To make their boss get to a last, best, and final offer that's fair and adequate quicker, right? So again, that's one thing I would say that we celebrate and we're really proud of. Two, we were able as a labor movement to advocate alongside our partners and alongside the agency for a historic increase in funding for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. That is transformational for making up for the loss of capacity over many, many years and many, many biennia. That will drastically help BOLI deal with wage and hour violations, civil rights complaints, housing justice violations, and all the ways that they regulate these transformational workplace laws that we passed over the last 15 to 20 years. We always say that a law is only as good as it can be enforced. And without a strong enforcement agency, we've been struggling. So that was the second thing we're really proud of. And the third thing I would say, there's lots of things I could probably categorize in this third bucket, but we were really proud to see an expansion of the prevailing wage law in Oregon apply to offsite fabrication. That is a really important priority for the building trades and construction union workers. That was a loophole that was being abused by corporate actors. So we're really proud of a number of things. We know that there's lots more work to do and unfinished business, but those are three things that I would point to today.
Thank you, President.
Wow. I'd like to remind our listeners that they are listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. So, if you just joined our broadcast, we are also celebrating our fall membership drive. KBOO thrives on community programming, focusing on local artists, activists, and nonprofit organizations that fuel our communities. Do something. Become a monthly sustaining member. Set aside a recurring monthly donation by texting KBOO to 44321.
Hi again, this is Dr. Audrey. I'd just like to say that our guest today is Brother Graham Traynor. He's the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Brother Traynor has noted previously the 100 days of the Trump administration has created a level of chaos felt throughout the nation, worldwide and locally. And just a little quick question, how has organized labor responded to address this chaos nationally, Brother Traynor?
We could have a whole segment about that question too, because obviously it's something we are thinking about, talking about, strategizing over daily. These last 100, and I think there's about a little bit over 200 days into this administration now that we have been wading through. I think you said it best at the top that it really has created a level of chaos, confusion, trauma to many constituencies and many communities, but it's clear that there's a very overt hostility towards organized labor and unions too, and I think that that is in the form of attacks on the federal civil service and public sector workers in the federal government, and the way that the Doge strategy with Elon Musk in the early days came in and just used literally a chainsaw to the federal government, slashing hundreds of thousands of jobs. It's shown in the way that they have slashed with the stroke of a pen collective bargaining rights to over 1 million workers now. Yep. With a number of executive orders, and most recently a couple weeks ago, the attacks on Veterans Affairs workers and their collective bargaining rights. It's shown in the hostility towards workers and their unions through eroding workplace protections at the Department of Labor. It's shown in their focus on crippling the National Labor Relations Board and making sure that workers don't have an avenue to seek justice and fairness and a settlement through that avenue. And so so there's lots to digest and lots to react to. Mm-hmm. But the thing I often say is, they want us, they, our opponents, the opponents of organized labor, the billionaires, they want us to only focus on the things that are traumatic, the things that are hard, the things that are really debilitating, right? Because it's like, how do you take it all in? And what we have really focused on are the things that we can control, right? As a labor movement, we've taken this fight first and foremost to the courts, where we've had a little bit of a mixed record on wins and losses, but there's no question that the judiciary in many cases is acting like the kind of checks and balances that they need to be, that they're part in our form of government. They are, they need to be, must be. We're taking this fight on in the streets. The National AFL-CIO is wrapping up a bus tour the week of Labor Day, where they visited 20 different states, held 50 different events in communities around the country, focus not just on the anti-Trump, anti-administration narrative, but distilling for the working class, distilling for working people, what was in that big, ugly bill, that big, ugly betrayal bill that eroded healthcare protections for millions of Americans, that single-handedly was the largest transfer of wealth upward from the working class to the billionaires in American history, many argue. So distilling that for working people in all these stops and all these events over these last few months has been a really important priority as we try to educate, right? Because it's a complicated bill. It's a big, ugly, complicated, confusing bill. But at the end of the day, it was a gift to billionaires, and it was an act of theft from the working class, right? That's the basics, and we need to distill that across the country. We're here in Oregon focused on how we can also ensure that our policymakers, our elected leaders, don't just hold the line and defend us, but actually move the ball where we're able. And that's why we went into the legislative session with such a bold agenda. That's why we put it all on the line for many of those things that I mentioned earlier. We are always thinking about how to help the most vulnerable workers in our movement who are most attacked too. So we've had phone banks to help AFGE and other federal government unions with their membership drives, because as they had their collective bargaining rights eroded with the stroke of a pen, they also had dues deduction taken away. So trying to make sure that we meet workers and their unions where they're at. You know, this will continue. It's going to be a rough couple years. We all know that. But there is no more effective check to this chaos, confusion, and I would argue authoritarianism that we're seeing out of this federal administration than the organized labor movement. And so it's up to all of us, not just in states with strong union movements, not just in the West or the Pacific Northwest, but across the country, to really do everything we can in our power to not just survive, but to really sort of push the envelope on what we mean when we say working people need to thrive in this really challenging time, as hard as it may be. So
now the Oregon's Attorney General, he's partnering with other states to address harmful executive actions. Now, is this an affirmative action of why elections matter?
I think it absolutely is. I think we're really proud of Attorney General Dan Rayfield here in Oregon and the leadership he's shown. You know, he ran on a platform that included putting working families and Oregonians and working people in Oregon first. And I think what we're seeing is a result of someone who runs on an agenda that speaks to working people, gets elected with the help of organized labor and the broader progressive coalition and community, and then starts to implement and govern with those same values, great things can happen, right? And so from day one, AG Rayfield has been on the front lines of lots of both multi-state lawsuits, both in a lead role and in a following other states role, and as other states step up and lead. And so I think whether it's the tariff lawsuit or holding the administration to account on the attacks on the civil service, or the list goes on. I think the count is probably now in the dozens of lawsuits that our attorney general has been party to against the Trump administration for a variety of unconstitutional and overreach steps that they've taken. And so we're really proud of that. And it definitely, to your specific question, it definitely shows that elections matter, and pro-worker, pro-union politicians really can make a difference.
And one last question for me. Can you describe, President Traynor, the Oregon AFL-CIO approach to challenge the president's actions?
Well, I mentioned a few of them a second ago, but a couple of the things I would say, you know, we're part of this national movement that is focused on doing everything in our power and recognizing the political strengths of our respective states to meet the moment, right? I was just on a call earlier today where my colleague and brother, President Rick Levy of the Texas AFL-CIO, was giving a readout of this egregious, cynical, additional gerrymandering strategy that the governor of Texas is taking, because he got a call from President Trump saying, hey, I need you to squeeze about five more seats out of for Republicans out of the congressional maps in Texas. And the labor movement in Texas is not just taking that. They are in the streets, they're around the state, they're in the state capitol, they are in solidarity, not just because it's a partisan issue, but because it's a threat to democracy. And I think on the other hand of that, you see my colleague and sister in the struggle, Lorena Gonzalez, the president and leader of the California Labor Federation, who's right in the trenches in the California movement, to ensure that if they play dirty, if they go low, that it's past time to just go high. It's important to meet them and play by their same dirty tricks and rules. And if that means doing a counter to the California maps, if Texas does what they're doing, that's a counterbalance to this threat to democracy that no one wants to be in this situation. But the labor movement is helping lead this really important moment in spite of how challenging it is, right? So I think, you know, whether it's solidarity to those actions and those movements around the country or in our own backyard, helping affiliates navigate these challenges by sharing resources, doing things like being in the trenches with AFGE and doing phone banks to convert dues payers to e-dues to make sure that they're able to do the important representation work. You know, the list is long about how we're trying to address this moment, but I'm really proud of our movement here in Oregon, and I'm especially proud of how the broader national labor movement is stepping up to lead in this really challenging time, because again, we are the most effective check to not just corporate greed, but the labor movement across this country is the most effective check to authoritarianism and attacks on our democracy. So,
thank you,
President. So, Brother Trainer, you have an AFL-CIO convention coming up in September. So what's your message going to be?
Well, our message and theme for the convention is strength through solidarity, unified, defend, empower. We are really, really excited about coming together on the beautiful Oregon coast in just a couple weeks to talk about the strategy for the movement moving forward, some of the things that we're talking about today, to celebrate the wins that we've been able to lead on and win, but to also learn best practices for how to take on this fight over the next couple of years, right? We know that specific communities like the LGBTQ community, like the immigrant community, are especially targeted with this bloated approach to ICE and masked agents coming into our communities and ripping people off the streets. That's not just an immigrant issue, that's a worker issue, and that's a labor issue that we are in the trenches with. And so we're proud to, at our convention, highlight the Oregon for All Coalition, the coalition led by Pakun and our immigrant rights coalition community, to really sort of empower the labor movement to double down in these moments of real great challenge.